relate to EFU land, or does that relate to forestry land, or does that relate to a combination of EFU forestry and AF land?
The latter. It would refer to all land that technically meets the definition of agricultural land, regardless of the kind of zone it falls into.
Madam Chair.
Okay, just let me, I will get to you in just 1 second.
Office of the half.
So when you're looking at these, what is all of these lands to be classified as marginal land? They have to meet, first of all of them have to meet the income test then, is that correct?
That's right. That would be right.
And then they have to meet one or the other, either parcelization or productivity, which is really for forest land. Is that correct?
Correct.
Could you repeat that, Kevin? Because that was pretty clear. I can understand it, I think.
So I'm saying every piece of land that's classified as agricultural land, whether it's in forest use or exclusive farm use, has to meet an income test. All of them have to meet the income test. Is that correct?
That's right.
And then they have to meet either the parcelization test or the soil classification or productivity.
That's right.
Maybe give me an example as to, you're trying to get over here to this box that's marked
marginal.
It's marginal. And you, how do you get there again?
Well, the way I would do it if I were a planner is I would probably know ahead of time, know enough about my county to know where I thought the lands that were marginal were. That is, lands that have lower productivity or are in small ownerships. Then I would go to those lands and get the information I need about those lands and first identify the poor soils or the lower quality soils and then see whether land that falls into that poor soils classification, whether those operations are making $20,000 a year or not. If not, they're marginal lands. Then in another part of the county perhaps where the soils may be good, there are going to be some very small ownerships that have happened over the years. I would then go to those lands, see if I could find enough to meet the small ownerships test, and if I found some, then I would look at those lands and see if they're part of operations producing $20,000 or more. If not, then they are marginal lands.
Representative Trahern?
Before Priestley.
Representative
Parkinson,
but he said he forgot his question.
I remember my question. The definition of agricultural land actually would include the land in downtown Beaverton, except that it's within an urban growth boundary, right?
Yes, that's correct.
What's all land in Western Oregon?
Virtually.
Representative Trahern.
Would your definition of agricultural land include something that is clearly designated as forest land that is not in one of these AF zones?
It's possible that it could, yes. A county could, if that land is, say, in Western Oregon, is Class 4 land, a county could treat that as marginal land because it technically meets the definition of agricultural land, yes.
Even though they designate it as a forest land class.
That's right. They'd have that choice. They could leave it in the forest designation, or they could put it through the marginal lands test and designate it marginal lands if they wanted to, and it satisfied the test.
So it could originally be in forest and then move to marginal lands.
That's correct.
Representative Parkinson and then Representative Anderson.
I forgot what county you're from.
I'm from?
No, the planner. Weren't you a county planner?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
I'm a lawyer.
Okay.
But I'm from Multnomah County. I live in Multnomah County.
Oh, I thought you were a land use. You just know the bill.
That's right.
Okay.
He wrote it.
Okay.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson and then Representative Trahern.
To carry on, we get into page 3, section 5, down at the bottom, line 35. We're talking about area zone for exclusive farm use, where we can have a dwelling. And we go on. And of course, the following page 4, line 18, we get into with farm use or the propagation or harvesting of a forest product, all inclusive. But then we get down to line 26, and then we have an entirely different definition of income that we produce. Way back in the bill, we talk about $20,000, and then up here we talk about $10,000 two consecutive years. The other VIV is $20,000 two out of five type things. And this is where it gets confusing to me. Can you
explain the year, the $20,000 in the marginal lands test and the $10,000 in the farm dwelling criterion?
The $20,000 has nothing to do with being able to build a home on the lot, right? You can just say it's marginal. Is that right?
That's right. It opens the door to further residential development, but you're right. It has nothing to do with building a house on the land.
One follow-up, I guess, that we've been talking. We've seen that using the 50 and the 85 in the forest, cubic feet and so on, and if we use Douglas fir as a criteria, that in western Oregon, if we use 50 feet, we only include 2% of the land, and if we use 85, we include 12% of the land, I guess it is, something like that. Would it be acceptable to put a phrase into the bill that says something about the species that is commonly harvested for commercial purposes or in the area or something like that? We're going to have to, it seems to me, because of all this chart here that we have, Douglas fir and hemlock and other softwoods and so on like that. If we're going to use a cubic foot as part of it, I know we've got the income setting over here, but perhaps I can gain quite an income from cottonwood for pulp on some land that grows like weeds or this or that compared to, see what I'm driving at?
If I understand your suggestion, Representative Anderson, you're saying tie the species commonly grown into the area to the cubic foot site class, or excuse me, site index chosen. I seems like a good idea.
Thank you. Sure. Representative Trahern and then Representative Parkinson.
I didn't realize you were the one that were the writer of the bill or Harvard. Why did you start out with, on line 7, page 1, defining agricultural lands as, and point this directly towards agricultural land? Or perhaps you can answer it another way. Do you see forest land as being agricultural land?
Well, Representative Trahern, it's incorrect to say that I wrote the bill.
No, I thought someone made that statement.
You know, some people may think that, but the bill was written by Agriculture for Oregon. And
I'm
helped
sure them. that an organization didn't write it. Someone wrote it for them.
Well, I sat down with Agriculture for Oregon on... We probably met once a week or once every other week over the period of 3 months, would you say, Hector?
I think that's...
And the language in the bill was hashed out week after week. And at each one of those meetings, there were half a dozen to a dozen farmers from various parts of the state. They chose the language, and I put it into bill form for them. That's where the bill came from.
Okay. Go ahead. Can you answer my question?
Now, you were pointing to...
Well,
line 7 on page 1.
Yeah, it starts out by defining agricultural lands as, and then from what you're telling us and from what the forestry people were telling us, that they were interested, that they felt that the gist of the bill, the thrust of it, if you will, was toward agricultural lands that may or may not have some forest land on. I guess my question is, did you consider in the writing of this, or if you didn't, why not, the concept of other forest land that is truly forest land, maybe poor forest land or maybe good forest land that might or might not be marginal?
Representative Trahern, what I recall from those meetings is the subject came up about whether the bill ought to deal with agricultural lands that were marginal and forest lands that were marginal. And the conclusion that the farmers came to was that they were farmers, and they really didn't feel that they were competent to try to determine, to try to set some standards to determine what kinds of forest lands were marginal. Instead, they aimed it at agricultural lands because that's what they knew something about. And I think it's as simple as that. And of course, to remind you that an awful lot of forest land in the state is also, by definition, agricultural land and would be covered by this bill.
May I respond, too? Hector McPherson again. We did have two small foresters that sat in with us that were dealing with small acreage-type forestry things, and they tried to keep us out of trouble of impinging too much on the forestry side of this thing. So we did take some forestry things into consideration, and particularly in this cubic feet site class and this kind of thing. But it is very true that we were a bunch of farmers that got together and we were looking at it from the agricultural land side. We had to define what we were doing in terms of what has already been done, and so we, agricultural land, of course, is what had already been taken care of through the LCDC as class 1 through 4 in Western Oregon, class 1 through 6. So we tried to adapt it to where we wouldn't get into any trouble with these classes of soils by getting too broad a classification of marginal lands.
Madam Chair, one more if I could.
Representative Parkinson. I mean, Representative Trainer.
Thank you.
Luckily, no.
Then, if I'm understanding you, you tried as much as possible to stay away from the forest land, recognizing that you, there is an overlap.
But, that is correct, but except that we recognize that class 1 through 4.
To go over to the agricultural area
right.
And away from the forest land as much as you could. Is that
yes.
Correct?
Only the included forestry lands were the ones that we were particularly concerned about.
Thank you.
Now, Representative.
Yeah, Mr. McPherson, this bill as written, I think all of us want to avoid any further fragmentation or partitioning of our super valley soil here, the good farmland. But in your opinion, this bill as written, wouldn't it have the reverse of fragmentation of partitioning over the years? Say this bill were as written, were in effect for 20 years. Wouldn't you see it going back to larger plots then? And I'll tell you, let me give you an example. Say a farmer 20 years ago had a brushy corner somewhere or something, a few trees on it. He split off 10 acres and sold it to some dude that's been making payments to him for 20 years. It's finally paid off. Now I'd like to build on it, but I would assume he can't. So the only person that's got any value to is that original farmer. And I can see maybe the guy selling it back to him for a fraction of what he paid for it. And I think that's what people are coming unglued about. Could you respond to that? Do you think it would have the tendency of being directly beneficial to larger farmers at the expense of the little folks?
I think it has. I think you would have to say that it certainly is to the advantage of the commercial farmer. Commercial farmers tend to be larger than part-time farmers and small farmers from that standpoint. And of course, from our standpoint, we have seen a great number of problems developed from the fragmentation of the land within the best of our exclusive farm use soils. So the philosophy that Ag for Oregon came down to was, yes, we needed to provide more places for people, for the part-time farmer, for the rural resident. We should do that in two ways, through our marginal lands proposal and through the enlargement of the lot of records. So we actually have given something. But in return for that, we felt that there was that we commercial farmers also needed to put some brakes on the amount of parcelization that was going on in the best farmlands. And so we've developed also some criteria here which would tend to reduce the amount of number of new non-farm dwellings in the EFU-type zone.
Hector, I would submit that in the valley here, you have criteria that would make it impossible for this to happen. That the only people that could use the land would be for the little guy to sell it back to the farmer. They can't build on it. They can't pay tax on it decade after decade.
I think...
And the 85 cubic feet and the productivity of the soil, when it's all that productive, it has to go back to the big farmer.
If I understand your position, you think that there is very little marginal land. And
I don't think there's
anything
about
that
here.
The testimony that you've heard here this afternoon, there was more than I really thought there was, because apparently we've come down to Peterson Butte as probably being marginal land from a quality standpoint, which I really didn't think it was, but that certainly was the testimony you got here this afternoon.
No, we didn't hear anybody say that.
Yes, well,
they said maybe.
neither he nor I can say. Yeah. But he did give you figures that many of these knolls, the tops of the knolls, would not be 85 cubic feet of growth per year. So there is some poor land in western Oregon by the testimony that I heard. But there also is a fair amount that is parcelized. But what Ag for Oregon was trying not to do was to extend, to turn all of the might be poorer lands of western Oregon into rural residential, because we already have so much of that already, plus all the parcelization that's already taken place in the AFU. So I think,
is the answer, do you actually think, though, that over a period of time it would reverse, your parcels of land would become bigger then?
I think that the farming operations have historically gotten bigger, and farming operations will historically, and I would project that in the future and say that, yes, I think that commercial operations will tend to get larger. But I think there's a two-way street to this thing. What I see is some of the smaller operations, a number of those that are coming along too and being quite productive in the area like vineyards. There's a type of agriculture there that we didn't know 10 years ago, where smaller tracts are feasible, and I can see it going in that direction for some types of agriculture, the intensive types of agriculture you have in Washington County and Clackamas County and Multnomah County particularly, as well as Berrien County, perhaps a little less in Linn County where I come from.
Thank you, Hector.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I don't know what point to throw this out, but as long as we're talking about soil types and all this and everything we brought up the other day, what would you think in EFU land, not including forest land, because it's different, of writing in a slope degree, like whatever it is, I don't know. I've ridden tractors, but I don't know my slopes, where it becomes not practical to run a tractor for agricultural purposes into the exemption, whether it's 20 or 25 degrees, not for forest, but ag. Let's go over here.
Mr. Lyles, yes.
Madam Chairman, I'm Chuck Lyles from the Department of Ag. Essentially, you have that in the bill now when you talk about classes 5 through 8, because all class 5 and greater land basically get that classification from the slope. See, slope is one of the criteria that is used in developing your classes, and class 5 and above, essentially class 6 and above, because there's very little class 5 lands, are classified that primarily because of slope, not because of soil.
To follow that up, then, are there really no class 3 lands that are on steep slopes?
Not on steep slopes, no, sir.
Okay, then we were in error in the testimony we heard from Washington County, I believe, right?
Class 3 lands, I forget the exact classification, but I don't believe can be on steeper than something like 15 or 20%, something in that category.
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley.
This may be an absolute frivolous question, but I always like to kind of get these goalposts. Former State Senator Alf Corbett was before our committee on the last bill, and I just happened to know that I was out to his place once there in Portland. They owned 18 acres of their family property, undeveloped. They just had a home on 18 acres on Council Crest, the most valuable property, I think, in the city of Portland. But it's all, everybody, in other words, you're driving along, and all of a sudden you go into the Corbett estate there. And with that 18 acres undeveloped, now they since sold it off and are subdividing it. I think probably got the houses in now. This is about a year ago. But if they hadn't done that, would they not be able to subdivide that 18 acres right in the center of the most wealthiest property in the city of Portland?
Representative Priestley, I think they can answer, but that's, you remember, that's an urban growth boundary, which is...
It's within an urban growth boundary?
Yes.
Right.
Which is totally different than what we're talking about.
This does not really apply to land within an urban growth boundary.
This is exclusive of urban growth boundaries.
Is everything within, say, the Portland metropolitan area, like there are a few blank spots kind of between
That's there. All in urban growth boundary, which is set by MSD.
There's no sort of donuts in there where you
know. No.
Shouldn't there have been? Shouldn't there be?
Not if your object is to confine your growth to a certain area and stop the growth outside of that area, then you want all those donuts filled in within that urban growth boundary.
question cuts both ways.
Right, but I'm saying if you're going to do that, you have to. I have a question. Back to line two, because I'm having problems with it. On page two, we're talking about agriculture lands, which could include forest land. Sometimes they're synonymous, sometimes they're not. They can be zoned either way. They can be zoned dual zoning. Would that forest operation, when you say the land, this is the first test you use, the land was not part of a farm operation. Now, does that also include, by saying the word farm operation, how do I want to say this? By saying the word farm operation, are you then excluding if it were growing trees on it?
Madam Chair, if I might, you could probably make that clearer if you wanted to apply to a forest operation in a forested area that happens to technically meet the definition of agricultural land, to expand that to say the land was not part of a farm or forest operation. You could do that.
Would you put the same amount of money to apply?
You would want to ask yourself, and I guess you have the expertise here, whether that's a reasonable sum of money to separate a forest operation that's going to make a contribution from a forest operation that's really not able to make a contribution. I think $20,000 is a good figure to distinguish a commercial farm operation from one that's smaller, but whether it's the right figure for a forest operation or not, I think you could ask someone from the Department of Forestry.
I guess what I am a little nervous about or worried about is if that test is supposed to be for land that has also happened to be very productive forest land, and you don't have an income test there, you would only have the parcelization or the soil classifications are capable of producing, particularly under the parcelization area, I would think that you might have some extremely productive forest land going into marginal land.
That's possible, and I think that's why you've heard a lot of testimony that 100 acres ought to be considerably higher. I think the Farm Bureau suggested 1,000, Agriculture for Oregon suggested 320. And I believe you also heard some testimony from the owner of 80 acres in Washington County, an 80-acre woodlot, who said that he was aware of many areas in that part of Washington County in relatively small ownerships, 20 acres and smaller. And when you have a parcel that small, it's very difficult to meet, I would think, the $20,000 income test unless you cut it all at once. It would certainly, I believe, be impossible to sustain that kind of an income from a 20-acre piece.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
If this legislation be passed, kind of like it is, wouldn't there be another safety net somewhere, like the local area, planning commissions and county commissioners and stuff? They'd have to identify their marginal land, wouldn't they, and zone it properly and all that good stuff?
Well, Representative Parkinson, this is simply an authorization to counties. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tell them they have to do it. So. If a county decided that it didn't want to designate a lot of its forest land as marginal land, it could choose not to. That's correct.
Is this not also minimum standards, and they can put anything?
That's correct, too. They could choose something some other standard, as long as it's not less restrictive than the standards in this bill.
I might respond to that, too, if I might. It's my feeling that really the $20,000 does apply to the agricultural side and may not be a limiting factor on the forestry side. Therefore, we have to be perhaps even more careful to be sure that we get this cubic feet per acre a reasonable test, because the $20,000 is not going to be perhaps a reasonable test. In other words, it wouldn't rule land out on that basis.
I guess, Hector, I understand that and understand what this producing, but I'm saying that's all. The test is an or test, which is the parcelization test where you might find a lot of highly productive forest land in
adjacent to.
In the parcelization, it may meet that test. And in that case, the capable of producing would not be a test for them at all. Because they wouldn't have to meet that test if they met the parcelization test.
And that is absolutely correct. And of course, that has been explained that we would like to enlarge that parcelization area larger because it would at least minimize the problem. But I grant you that that really doesn't take care of it entirely in the forest side of the thing because of the $20,000 figure isn't necessarily appropriate for forest operations.
Madam
Chair, limiting.
Representative Parkinson.
I'm asking good questions, so bear with me.
Oh, I know you are.
The forester isn't here, but is anyone aware in
Western...
Yes,
right there.
Let's ask the forester.
We'll just shuffle chairs.
Mr. Forester.
Is there a single chair somewhere you could bring up? Do you want to see if you can find one, Dick? See if there's a single chair.
Are you aware of any area in Western Oregon, 1,000 acres, that's all composed of 20-acre pieces or smaller contiguous? Would there be any, do you think? I can't imagine such an area.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
So it's really a phony test when you start talking about 1,000 acres. It'd be like the lot of record bill from last session. Nobody can meet it. Why have it? They'd think that the legislature was really giving them something. We could all go home and tell them we'd solve this problem. But nobody qualifies. Could I have a response from any of them?
I can respond to that. What agriculture for Oregon, what was in the bill initially was 320 acres. When that figure was in the bill, agriculture for Oregon asked the planners on the staff of 1,000 Friends to try to apply that small ownerships test in various parts of the state. And we took it to about 6 counties around the state to see if we could find areas that qualified. And the one area that I remember in particular, because I worked on it myself, was Washington County. And when we used the 320-acre figure, we looked particularly at the lands that the county has designated AF20. That is a zone that qualifies as an EFU zone, but as a matter of fact, a lot of that land is mixed pasture and small woodlots. We were not able to look at all of it because it's, I believe, something like 41,000 acres. Instead, we took identifiable areas and tried out a couple of samples. And what we found is that, and I can give you the statistics, but of the 6 areas we looked at, we found areas that qualified under the small ownerships test in, I think, 4 or 5 of them. For example, in one particular area, the area was designated AF number 8, AF area number 8. There were something like 500 acres in that particular area, and 419 or 420 acres qualified as marginal land.
Under the parcelization?
When it was at 320 and 50%, that's right.
Madam Chair?
Representative Parkinson?
Wouldn't this be because Washington County had this zoning procedure in place for a number of years, treating, I guess they thought it was marginal land, and they have set up kind of a situation where it would apply. But the chances are it wouldn't apply anywhere else in the state.
Representative Parkinson, I don't think that's true because Washington County was probably shifting from small lot sizes in their zoning ordinances to larger lot sizes before other counties. Mm-hmm. Washington County had an enacted comprehensive plan in 1973. I think you would find that in the foothill areas of the Cascades, on top of some of the buttes in the Willamette Valley, you'd find similar parcelization patterns. I'm just remembering now that we also checked out tried to apply the small ownerships test to an area of Polk County called Fishville, or I'm not remembering it exactly right, but it's in the hilly area of Polk County, southwest of Dallas, and there were some lands that qualified there as well under the small ownerships test. So I think you would find that in the foothill areas where there's been traditionally been some parcelization, there will be lands that meet the small ownerships test.
In the 100-acre or 320?
No, we were using 320 at that time.
Okay, 1,000 acres. Now, you're recommending 1,000. Do you know any of them?
No, that was a recommendation by
that. That was a Farm Bureau representative.
Okay. We did not use that test when we did the field testing because it was not in the bill at the time.
Okay. I won't pursue anymore. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop. And
what is your recommendation in 320?
Ag for Oregon, and I think I've reiterated several times, we would like to go back to the 320. We think the 100 that's in there is inappropriate. We've had a chance to look at some of the data since that 100 was proposed, and there are some areas we're terribly concerned about, and one of those is Representative Bradbury's area, the Harbor Bench area, and we have a gentleman down there who farms in such things as bulbs and very specialty crops. That is an area that's very highly parcelized. It's in a county that is not known for its good land use planning, and where if you use the 100 acre in the parcelization, it would fit. Even if you took all those, and there are a number that would make 20,000, would be ruled out because of the $20,000 test, even though they're parcelized, you still could pick up areas if you had it down to 100 acres that in this very valuable, very specialized type of an area. In fact, I'm told that the land there sells for around $14,000 an acre, which is a subdivision type price, but it is used for agriculture for the most part.